If you think trains will stop if they see a car on the tracks, you're right, they will. About a mile after they hit you. In 2015 alone, 230 people were killed at railroad crossings. Don't become the next fatality. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. One.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. This is Jonathan Hernandez. Tommy's here with me as well. Tommy, what's going on?
Not a whole lot, man. It's the season's already over for us, so I'm physically here, but I don't know if I'm 100% mentally here.
Yeah, I like to describe it as a malaise that's just kind of, or a malaise or a haze that's kind of gone over all of us right now. I don't know how to describe it. Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod, and subscribe and download us on iTunes as well. And please leave us a rating and review. Those help a lot. With that said, before we get into the recap of the last three games, we've been on a little bit of a hiatus. Since then, the Lakers played Dallas, lost to them. Somehow we're in the middle of a winning stretch for the Lakers, if you can call it that, as they beat Detroit on Sunday. And then they played against Phoenix on Monday and lost to them as well. So the Lakers right now are 2-9, so we'll be recapping those three games. But before we get into that, let's get into a little bit of kind of around the NBA news really quickly, some quick fire kind of things. So Kevin McHale got fired today, as you know, the Rockets head coach. Somehow Byron Scott was not the first coach fired, yeah. But for some political reasons, it was Kevin McHale. And now it's looking like maybe Tibbs is in consideration for that Rockets group. Any quick thoughts on what you think about McHale's firing and possibility of Tibbs coming on?
I think the general media reaction to McHale being fired was, oh, he didn't deserve it. But when you have a team with James Harden and Dwight Howard, and they picked up Ty Lawson and it's Trevor Ariza, Terrence Jones, et cetera, et cetera, there's certain expectations. You can't start a season 4-7. I don't care who you are. Yeah, you got to be like Phil Jackson or something. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
Kevin McHale, he's had a couple good years. What has it been, like 3 years that this is his third year with Dwight? Yeah. So they've had a couple good years so far. I thought it was a little bit of a quick trigger, but obviously they know what they're doing, I guess. I don't know. I guess to respond to Tibbs being the rumor, I don't know if Tibbs is going to – I don't know how much he's going to make a difference. I mean, I know they'll get way better defensively, and honestly, they have a really good starting lineup for Tibbs, because presumably Tibbs is going to come in and – start Patrick Beverley once Beverley's back. I don't know when he comes back, but yeah. If you're looking at, besides James Harden, who's kind of known as a defensive liability, you have Patrick Beverley, Trevor Ariza, Terrence Jones, and Dwight Howard. All of those guys are very good defenders.
Yeah.
And James Harden he's bad, but like, he's bad in the sense that he tends to fall asleep. He's not like, in theory, like a completely just crap defender, like you're going to get blown by every time or something. So that team defensively could look really good. And then you figure, are they going to – I mean, they've been running this like shoot 43s a game offense for like the last 3 years. So like, what is – you know, what are they going to do about that? That's my only question with Tibbs. But yeah, I mean, it happened. Tibbs is probably an upgrade over McHale. But it's really interesting to me how bad that team has been doing so far.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think I've been following the Rockets just on the side the last couple years too, because Lin was on the team and then Dwight Howard and all that stuff. And I think judging from what I've gotten from their beat guys and their blog guys, Kevin McHale has never been a coach that they've been enthralled with necessarily.
Right.
He's just kind of been underwhelming, and it's more Morey's system that allows him to do all that stuff. I don't think he was as creative as, you know, the system made him seem, or whatever they're doing over there analytics wise makes him seem. But with that said, you know, I always like to see the Rockets suck like this, because I remember during the off season, during the summer, you know, the Rockets and their fans and their blog dudes, they just have such a persecution complex going
on.
Like,
do.
People don't like praise us enough. People don't praise Maury enough. Why doesn't anybody look at us? And I remember when the Lawson trade went down, I was talking smack to some random Twitter dudes, and they were just like, man, what are these guys going to say when midway through this season, Ty Lawson is putting up all-star numbers, right, and he's not making the all-star team? I was like, Ty Lawson had like 2 points and 1 for 8 tonight, was coming off the bench. This dude is like, he sucks, man. He's under like a contract year where they can cut him after this year because they made that contingent on the deal. So it's crazy that he's not even playing up to that, you know. So it's kind of nice to see all this backfire on them. And then actually when the Lakers drafted Larry Nance, I remember some Rockets guys on Twitter were like, hey guys, this is what the Lakers did with our 27th pick, so it doesn't look like we lost out on much. But now who has the last laugh? You know, I'm like, I bet you guys would want like Larry Nance, since you guys usually draft like a million power forwards anyways. Seriously. You know? So in that sense, it's good to see the Rockets kind of eat some crow and get some humble pie.
Yep.
With that said, that's kind of the only big NBA news around. Let's quickly go into, I think this weekend was the start of the NCAA basketball. Were you able to watch any of Scal, Ben Simmons, anything like that?
I caught a couple of the games. I mean, the only game I watched live was the Kentucky Duke game, because that was super exciting. That was on.
How was that?
That was on Monday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that game was really good. I mean, it's super early in the season, so it's really hard to tell. Kentucky has way more talent, and at this stage in the season, talent is going to win out because, you know, Duke's best player is a freshman and he needs to like integrate himself. So, yeah, it was a good game. I don't know. Did you want to talk about some of the players or?
Oh yeah, for sure. We want to preface this by saying that, you know, the big right now, it sucks that we're already
it's
in this
so
stage.
Sad, but you know, you gotta do what you gotta do.
It is. So the guys to look out for right now are Scalabissier, Ben Simmons. What's the guy from Duke?
Brandon Ingram.
Oh. Brandon Ingram, that's right. So those are the guys to look out for right now. I saw some highlights of Scalabissier and Ben Simmons, and then Chris Dunn, who's like, I think he's a second or third year player.
Chris Dunn, I think he's a third year. He's a beast.
He looked amazing. So I know like the Westbrook comparisons are being thrown out for Chris Dunn, but I kind of see more of a John Wallish type of player in him, because he's not as maniacal as Westbrook, like, but he's just as athletic as John Wall, and he has this really great mid-range game.
Oh, his mid-range game reminds me a lot of Chris Paul.
Yeah,
how he's so in control in that zone, and like, you know, once he gets into that area, he's like impossible to guard.
Right, and he's like a 6'4", 6'5", one of these long guards again. Super he's like strong. Super athletic.
Oh my god, yeah, he's going to be a really nice player.
He's probably one of the guys that a lot of these bemoaning Laker fans over Russell probably wished we had right now. But again, I'd like to say, don't worry about it. Chris Dunn looks good, though, just in a vacuum.
Right.
And then, so I watched Scal, and like, he's this weird hybrid of like Anthony Davis and I don't know, someone else. But like, his jump shot is like so pure. Like, it's crazy. I don't think he's as athletic as Anthony Davis or like even a Joel Embiid or something like that, but his length and then his touch around the basket and his jump shot is pretty uncanny for a guy of that size and that length. So what did you think of Scal?
Okay, so I think Kentucky's played three games so far, or maybe four, no, three. And Scal looked amazing in the second game, which is, I think, the one you're talking about.
26 points or something?
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was against some, like, you know, no-name team.
Yeah, right.
So it's like you always take that kind of stuff with a grain of salt. That being said, it was his second game ever as a college player. At some point, you just have to be like, you know, I was the one who, thank God this was before we were recording this podcast, so I'm not on the record, although I'll put myself out there right now. But I was the most skeptical of Carl Anthony Towns of all time, like between the two of us, I think. Like you would always bring up Towns, and I was like looking for every reason. At some point, I'm not like that blind, like probably around like January or February, yeah, I started to turn. And
you're an Okafor guy.
I was an Okafor guy all the way from the very beginning. But so Scal, he's in such an interesting system, and Calipari is so good at developing players. Like, Calipari brought in Towns. He knew that this guy had an outside touch, and he made him a legitimate low post player. Scal has an amazing outside touch. It's just so weird with Scal, though, because this guy can already play in the post. He can.
Yep.
He's like a cross between Okafor and Towns,
no, that's,
I feel like.
Exactly.
Like,
that's what I was going to say.
He has Okafor's touch, but like Towns' yep. athleticism and jump shot and defense and all that. And he, oh, my God. It's like I can see why he's getting a lot of number one hype. Yeah. And when it's all said and done, he probably will go number one. I mean, it might be. The thing is, Ben Simmons also looks like such a freak that,
yeah.
you know, it's really going to come down to a team just having to make a need, like, judgment call. I guess,
yeah,
it's going to be really interesting as the season progresses. But, yeah, no, I guess to get back to your original point, Scal, he looks really good, really smooth player, good length, extremely athletic for his size, really nice jump shot. He can shoot a hook shot from like the free throw line, and it just
yeah, it's super pure.
And it's so pure, dude. It's like it's, no one plays like weird. That anymore. And it's like on the one hand, you want to look at him and be like, oh, it's old school, but then he does so much new school stuff too. So it's like you just see a guy that like when he's in his prime, how are you ever gonna guard him? He can burn you in the pick and roll, he can burn you in the pick and pop, and he can burn you in the post. And like who in the NBA does all that? Like LaMarcus Aldridge,
right.
maybe,
right.
you know? So. It's
and there was this one play where he was actually running the break too, and he was like crossing people over.
Oh my god!
Like,
oh yeah,
he's probably not going to do that, but the fact that he can do that,
he has handles. You know, like he can dribble the ball. Like in a fast break, he's sort of like pow in the sense that like,
yeah,
he's not going to be like Randall, who he's like at, like he's not going to. That's not going to be his role to like push the ball when he gets a rebound. But the fact that he can't do it, I mean. If you're a Laker fan, and I'm sure none of us forget this, but like go back and look at 2009 Pau highlights, you know, when we won the championship that year and him pushing the break with like Odom on one wing and Kobe on the other wing and like dribbling between his legs.
Between his legs. Yeah, like a gazelle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Scal kind of reminds me of that. Yeah, really, really for exciting. Sure.
So yeah, Scal and Ben Simmons actually have really unique backgrounds. You know, Ben Simmons is from Australia, actually.
That's right.
And then Scal is from Haiti. And, you know, little tidbit, I think when he was like 14, 13 years old, like his family, like during the Haitian earthquake or whatever, his whole family, and including himself, were underneath a whole bunch of rubble because their house collapsed on them. And so this guy has some like real life, real world experience if you need that. And I'm sure he's going to be like a great interview on the NBA level.
Yeah.
So let's move on to Ben Simmons. What do you think of Ben Simmons? So, I saw one highlight game of his. I think he just had like a, maybe like 12 points, 11 rebounds, like 6 assists and like 6 blocks, something ridiculous like that. But, this guy, I'm not exactly sure who to comp him with. Maybe right now, like a LeBron James with much less of a jump shot right now. He just looks like, in the body of a power forward, but he runs like a small forward or a shooting guard. He just has tremendous vision. He's lethal in transitions, absolutely lethal.
Yeah.
And what separates him is like the defensive potential is off the roof there, you know, off the charts because, I mean, he had 6 blocks, but, you know, he's super lanky. You know, the shot's not there yet, but the court vision and the ability to run the break and just the athleticism is crazy. What did you think of Ben Simmons?
I pretty much agree with everything you said. I think Ben Simmons has a lot more to prove than Scal, just because Scal's a real center. It's like you said, he's like a small forward in a power forward's body, which can be deadly, but the danger is if he never develops a perimeter game, he's going to be severely limited because his handle is – his playmaking is very good for his size, but he's not LeBron. LeBron was throwing left-handed, no look, you know, half court alley-oops when he was in high school. If anybody was like watching those high school games that they used to televise of LeBron, right. like that guy was just like on another level. And I saw the LeBron comparisons with Ben Simmons. And when I watched him play, I can see what people are talking about. The danger is he runs the risk of becoming too much like a Julius Randle if he can never develop a perimeter shot.
Right.
Which is still, you know, a very, very good player, but he's going to be, you know, people are going to defend him like they're defending Randall, which I'm sure we'll get into later. And it's going to take away a lot from his game. But yeah, he's lethal in the half court. I mean, sorry, in transition. He's really, really athletic.
His handles are disgusting.
His
for a
hand
guy that
moves are
size.
disgusting. Look, they're not LeBron. They're not Kevin Durant, but they're very, very good. D'Angelo Russell showed in college that he had the potential to drop like 30 on any given night, and he was still looking to pass. And I sort of see a lot of that in Ben Simmons. Like, that fool plays with nobody on LSU, a team that hasn't done anything in years. And he could score 35 a night if he wanted to, take all those shots. And he wants to pass to his teammates. And I think that's really interesting that we're sort of seeing that like transition.
For sure. I'd almost describe him as like a more athletic Magic Johnson, longer and taller Magic Johnson. He doesn't really have a jump shot right now, but maybe he doesn't really need one. So we'll see. So yeah, Ben Simmons and Scal definitely impressing, and then the return player Chris Dunn as well. So yeah, that's a little NCAA preview. We'll kind of keep track of that. The Lakers obviously are going to be super bad, but I don't think you can count on keeping our pick right at this point because the Sixers still are winless. Somehow we're better than the New Orleans Pelicans, who have one win or something ridiculous like that. Some wonky stuff going on. But we actually do have our second round pick, so maybe we can do some deeper scouting this year. And we should still be bad enough to have like a mid-30s pick, so
That's right.
maybe not all will be lost. So before we actually we'll transition out of the NCAA talk, but before we actually get into our recap of the Lakers' last three games, we actually got Twitter questions.
Yay.
Whoa, Twitter questions. All right, here we go. So let me start this off. So we actually got two questions, and it's good because any more and we might go on forever because we can really go down the rabbit hole with some of these. So let's start with Danny Silver. His Twitter handle is @DS_Lakers, and he asked, "We all love Randle, but his development has slowed since the first few games. Should we be worried that he's so scoutable?" So this is something we were actually probably going to get into anyways, just through the flow of our discussion of the recap. But Tommy, what have you thought about Randle recently, and should we be a little worried?
Okay, so it's a really good question. I'm not worried at all. And obviously, I'm over-optimistic Laker fan, but okay, is Randle where I wanted him to be right now? No. But I think his problems are fixable. His clear, like, I'll tell you one thing that's his obvious clear problem, and one thing that I like despite that, okay? So his clear problem is his jump shot, in my opinion, right now is completely broken. Like, he's a confidence player, and when he can't get into the paint, he's not going to hit his jump shot. But the problem is, if he's, it's like it goes both. It's like, which one's going to come first? Because if he's not hitting his jump shot, no one's going to defend him out there, and he's not going to be able to get into the paint. So he needs to work on two things. One, obviously his jumper, which I mean, anyone with eyes could tell you that. Number two, he really needs to work on his body control. I don't know what happened to this guy, but I swear to God, if you look at his summer league highlights from like when it was rookie season, I felt like one thing that was so interesting about him was he weighed like 30 pounds more or something, but I felt like he was even more of a finesse player then than he is now. It's like, I don't know if this is blind speculation. I have no idea if this has anything to do with what I'm about to say, but I sort of feel like the Lakers bringing up Randle over the summer and him coming in every single day and just pounding with Meta World Peace for like 6 hours a day or whatever they did. I don't know if that made him feel that like that's what you're supposed to do, but like if you do that too aggressively and you're a rookie, you're gonna get called for a lot of fouls. And Randle's averaging two turnovers a game. I don't have the, I mean, I don't know how to break that down, but my guess would be at least half of his turnovers are offensive fouls.
Offensive
It
fouls.
feels like it anyway.
And he looks like meta out there, just barging into people with like no regard for
Yeah.
human life.
So besides the jumper, the second thing he really needs to work on is body control. Like, you have strength, which is really good. Use your strength in the post. Use your strength in the mid post. Use your strength to like bump guys out of the way when you get under the rim. But don't use your strength to just like run in a straight line through people. That's not how you play basketball, you know what I mean? So besides those two things that I think are pretty obvious that he needs to work on, the one thing I really like is that he's still averaging 8 rebounds a game, despite how horrible he's playing offensively. He's not letting it get to him. People say like, oh, 8 rebounds a game, big deal. He's only playing 28 minutes a game, so 8 rebounds a game is actually pretty good. If he was playing, 32, or once he starts getting like in the mid 30s, which I think he'll get there by the end of the season, he'll be averaging easily over 10 rebounds a game. So that's one thing I really like about him. He was a very good rebounder in college. He at times in the summer league last year, in the summer league this year, in the preseason this year, and in some games in the early season this year, showed that he can fall asleep a little bit rebounding wise when his offense isn't there. I think just to throw, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but the Blake Griffin comparison with Randle. Blake Griffin is a guy who, when he's not going offensively, I feel like a big criticism of him is he tends to fade in all regards. That's what you don't want out of Randle. He's never going to be as offensively gifted all around as Blake Griffin, so you want to make sure that he's really working in other areas. He's going to get assists, he's going to get rebounds, he's going to get steals, he's going to do other things when his offense isn't going, and that's one thing I really like.
So I am a little more measured. I think I am a little concerned. I'm not concerned overall about where he's going to be. I'm just concerned about what he's going through right now, because some of the things that I want him to work on obviously are, right now I want him to work on his post game, because I just don't think, well, one, he's not really a post player. He's more of a face-up player. But I'm kind of concerned with his lack of a post game and his lack of a right hand. He still hasn't developed his right hand whatsoever. I think you saw
Yeah,
in the Phoenix
you're
game,
absolutely right about that. I forgot that.
he was trying to back down. I forgot it was he was trying to back down whoever he was guarding, and then he went up with a right hook, and Alex Len with a weak side block just absolutely ate him up. And so in that sort of scenario, you wish he would, gotten some homework from Pau Gasol or something, because in that scenario, that's where you like show the pump fake and then step in and then go in for like the layup or something like that. But Randle just has too much of a one-track mindset kind of thing going on, where it's almost obvious what he's gonna do. He's gonna, do his little semi shimmy shake sham god little dribble thing, and then all of a sudden barge into you and try and make it into the layup or something, or he's gonna get an offensive foul, or he's gonna drive, like, he'll go left and then all of a sudden he'll put it back to his right for you to block
And
it,
I guess to like in retrospect counter what we had this discussion, I think maybe in our last episode when we were kind of bashing Pincus a little bit, talking about how well Byron was developing Randle. This guy has been around the facility for like over a year, and like no one has like really drilled into his head, hey man, you need to learn how to use your right hand. Like I'm
Seriously.
sure they've told him, but this is like a glaring issue. This isn't like, oh
Of
yeah, you need to
course.
work on that. What I said before with the jump shot and the body control, those are things that take time. Those are things that like somebody can tell you, hey, you need to work on that. And it's not going to happen overnight. The right hand thing, that should have happened this past summer, for God's sake. Like that's something that you can work really hard on for one summer, and you should be able to go in and at least try doing it. I mean, for God's sake, even Andrew, like clumsy Andrew Bynum, was able to figure out how to use his left in like
For
a
sure.
season, and he didn't even play his rookie year, you know? So it's that the right lack of right hand thing is like really sad to me, from a like player development standpoint. Like who is talking to this guy about what he should be working on?
Never mind the fact that the guy that they're getting on, D'Angelo Russell, has already shown that he's used his right hand in actual layups to actually make shots in games. And yet, up to the supposed, for some reason, Julius Randle is just kind of getting, he's lucky right now because he's kind of getting, under the radar. Nobody's really badgering him right now. I guess some people are, but D'Angelo's kind of getting all the criticism while he's kind of just struggling on the side, kind
You're right
of.
about that.
So I'm a little worried about Randle. I'm not worried because I know how talented he is long-term aspect-wise, but obviously I'm worried in the things that he should be working on right now that aren't working, that aren't happening. Like you said, the right hand, his lack of, I'm worried, more worried about his development and what's going on in terms of what they're teaching him. And the other thing, I mean, to the other thing to point out again is that he's a guy who needs a lot of space, and the Lakers just aren't giving him that. And the fact that he's trying to still dribble drive into a lane where Roy Hibbert has camped out is just ridiculous to me. But that's the kind of offense that he's working with right now, and it's impeding him again. But also, he needs to learn, obviously, how to counteract those things because it's not available to him right now. So yeah, in terms of Randle, I mean, Tommy's not worried. I'm not worried overall in terms of his long-term prospects. I'm just worried about what's going on right here, right now. But as it is with most things, how can you not be worried? There's a ton of stuff to be worried about. So
that's right.
It's not just like a Randle issue, but I do find it funny that Randle's legitimately been playing poorly, and the media hasn't really gotten to it yet. They've just been talking about D'Angelo Russell. People have been piling on D'Angelo. Meanwhile, the one guy who's actually gotten the usage and the actual minutes has, like, Randle actually hasn't been playing well. D'Angelo's played okay, you know?
Yeah,
so.
And I guess the only other thing I'd add about Randle is, I guess another reason I'm not worried is because people, I think, are expecting him to play like a sophomore because he is, I think, technically, they classified him as a second-year player. And look, I get there's a benefit of being around the facility and all that. You get the experience by playing in the games, okay? So Randle is 20 years old. Like, there are plenty of guys who are going to come out in this current draft who are going to be older than him. You know, like we were talking about Chris Dunn earlier. Chris Dunn's like 22, you know? He's, I think, a third year, but he missed an entire year because he had shoulder surgery, I believe it was. So so Randle is very young. He has a lot of time to improve. The things that he is not good at are fixable, and the things that you like are the fact that we can throw him out there. I don't think we should. We'll get to this later, but we can throw him out there to close games, and he's not going to completely screw it because he got a year of experience sitting there on the bench and watching it and watching tape and doing all that stuff. The stuff on the court, that's going to take time. And I think maybe I'll change my tune if he still looks like this by the end of the season, but I think him and D'Angelo are both going to make dramatic strides over the course of the year.
Yeah, when Byron gets fired.
It was a good question, though. I like this question.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Danny Silver, I believe, for submitting that question. So let's move on to the last question submitted by D-Nick, at D-Nick1994. Oh my god, were you born in 1994? Okay, anyways. With D-Nick asks, and I, you know, we are in that stage once again where Lakers fans are grasping at straws here, and I can't blame D-Nick because this is what we do as well. And you're going to love us in the summer when there's nothing to talk about because we'll always have stuff to talk about Lakers-wise.
Yeah.
That's going to be us in our prime because we're going to be talking a lot of free agency trades and all that stuff. So D-Nick's question is, can you name some realistic free agents that we could land this summer? I mean, you know, like we started off this podcast, we're already in a malaise and this haze is over us and we're already thinking about the off season pretty much, which is really sad, but that's the state we're in. So in the interest of time, you know, me and Tommy are going to throw out maybe one or two names that we think we can realistically get this summer. And to be clear, once again, the Lakers are going to have the most cap space out of anyone in the league, pretty much. The bad thing about what this season is doing is that we are not going to attract anybody by saying, hey, look at our improvement. Look at our record. We at least won like 30 games. That's clearly out the window. No more Kevin Durant. No more any of that. The only small scenario where Kevin Durant is possible is if, let's say, Kevin Durant's like, hey, can you get Al Horford to come? And we'll be like, hey, we have room for both of you. Yeah, Al Horford says he's coming. Will you sign? That's the only scenario where if we do like a Miami Heat team up kind of thing. But barring that, you know, the operative word here is realistic free agents. So with that being said, some realistic free agents that I think that we'll be able to go after and are legitimate. For me, one of my biggest ones is Nicholas Batum. So this guy is an unrestricted free agent next year. He's currently playing for the Charlotte Hornets, and he's currently killing it right now.
He's good. He's really solid.
He is good. And this is the first time he's actually had more of a leadership offensive role, because in Portland he was kind of buried by Aldridge and Damian Lillard and all that stuff. But this year, actually getting the ball more in his hands and actually being like tasked to score more, he's averaging like 17 points, 6.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, like over 2 threes a game. He had one stinker the last game, but this is his game log. He had 24 points, 8 assists tonight, 3 threes. He had a 4-pointer the last game, which was a stinker. But then before that, he had 33 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 5 threes. The game before that, 28 points, 2 assists, 8 rebounds, 5 threes.
Damn,
the game before
I didn't even
that,
realize 20, he was doing that well.
24 points, 5 rebounds, 2 threes. And he's shooting like, you know, 55, 58, 57% in his like hot streak game. So This guy looks amazing right now. I'm not sure if he's going to be willing to leave Charlotte, but
I think
mean,
he probably.
yeah, I think he probably would if the Lakers are, you know, offering him the max. So definitely look out for Nicholas Batum because he's one of those hybrid players that, you know, you could play at the he's played three all of his life, but you could also switch him off at the four. You know, you could play around a lot with his versatility, and he'd be a great get for the Lakers because we're really in need of I think two of our biggest needs are obviously a big man and a wing player. And Nicholas Batum definitely fits that wing player mold. So throw the max at Nicholas Batum, baby, and let's do it. He's only 27 right now, so he's not even that old, too. So
I feel like he's been around for so long, but
seriously.
But yeah, he's so young still.
So he's really stepped it up, and I think he could be a realistic get this summer. Before I go into my second guy, give me one of your guys, Tommy.
Well,
oh my God, you're not gonna say.
Okay. I just want to point out that we didn't define the bounds of real. Everybody has a different definition of realistic.
True. Okay, that's fair.
Okay, so I still think, I know I'm crazy or, you know, whatever, but I still think it's, I'll say my realistic ones next, but I still think that Kevin Durant is a possibility to come here. And the reason I say that is because Oklahoma City looks solid this year. Like, I know Durant's been sitting for the last few games with a minor injury. They're only 7-5. Like, they're gonna make the playoffs, assuming Durant doesn't get hurt. They're gonna make the playoffs. That being said, Golden State is so freaking good again this year. Like, they're better than they were last year. The Spurs are just gonna be really good. Once the Spurs haven't even, like, the Spurs are playing at like 25% speed right now, and they're still, I think they only have two losses or something. There's just so many good teams in the West. Like, the Clippers haven't turned it on. They're gonna be better than Oklahoma City, probably. Where I'm going with this is Oklahoma City is probably, in my opinion, not going to advance past the second round. And at that point, Durant's going to be looking elsewhere. Why would Durant come to the Lakers? Okay. There are all these crazy articles out there about how Durant could go to Golden State. And like, there's a scenario where Golden State could have two MVPs in their prime, basically, on the
that season. Would be disgusting,
which would be disgusting. And like, for, you know, creating an NBA 2K team for fun, that would be, you know, that's probably what I would do, is put Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Draymond Green on the same team. But is it going to happen? No. And my opinion, no. And the reason I have that opinion is because I think everybody is obsessed with this notion that all the top stars want to pair up with all the top stars. I think LeBron James wants to pair up with all the top stars, and that's where this whole thing started. I think, look, it's been like this forever, that guys who are really good want to play with good teammates because they don't want to have the weight of the world on their shoulders. It's understandable. Like, it's going to be like that forever. LeBron James is the only guy who wants to play with like other MVPs in their prime on the same team. You know what I mean? Like, besides him, I just don't really see other guys like wanting to do that. Like, Westbrook and Durant, you might put in that category. Okay, they were drafted by the same team. They fell into it. You know what I mean? Like, I view Kevin Durant as a guy who really wants to win. I don't view him as a guy who's obsessed with winning at all costs, every championship, every year for the next 5 years. Because if he joins Golden State, that's what it's going to be. First of all, there's going to be like infinite pressure for them to do it. Second of all, they are going to do it because they're amazing. You know what I mean? They're extremely well coached. They have really good players. They would start
Kevin Durant at center.
Yeah, they would seriously, though. They there's a, in this hypothetical scenario, they could start Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, and Festus Ezeli, which is like assuming there. I guess the scenario assumes Ezeli isn't going to get a max offer somewhere, which I guess is a big assumption. But, you know, forget Ezeli. Throw in any generic, you know, drone athletic center. He's only going to play like 20 minutes a game, and you could play Draymond there the rest of the game. But it's an interesting idea, but I just don't think Kevin Durant is that sort of player. And I think, of course, I'm putting a lot of faith, and this is blind and probably dumb faith, in the Lakers front office to completely reverse all the crap they did for the last like two summers in their horrible free agent pitches and come at Durant with like a semi-business pitch that's like heavily tailored towards basketball stuff.
Right.
And just show him like, hey, you know, basically what the Suns tried to do with Aldridge, like, hey, this is how we used our power forwards last year. And these are all the analytics we have. And this is how you did in similar situations with Portland. Now, like, imagine if you plug that into what we're trying to do and the analytics are through the roof. I'm like oversimplifying this, but they need to come at him with some like aggressive stuff like that and show him that, like, hey, man, D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, Kevin Durant, Julius Randle, and we still have money to pursue a max center. That is a pretty interesting scenario. Do they win a championship his first year? Probably not. But I think it's like he's going to be 28 next summer. And that is a situation that I think he might enjoy. He's like, look, okay, I'm 28. I have some good years left. Let's try this for 4 years. If I don't win, then I'll go ring chase. But the Lakers have such a long history of building championship teams when they can get that star. And Kevin Durant is that star. And another thing, last thing I'll say is he's like one of three guys in the NBA that respects Kobe at this point. So I think he could see this like passing of the torch thing as like something that's kind of interesting and funny and like appealing to him.
Maybe.
And the dark horse thing that could help is Kobe agrees to come back at a minimum contract and play off the bench as the sixth man.
God.
That'd be hilarious. And if Kobe did that, then it would be like a really epic season. But anyway, so take it. I mean, it's, I don't know. People have different definitions of realistic, so maybe that's not.
There you go. There's yours.
But I think this is semi-realistic.
All right. There you go. That's fair. All right, so my last guy who I think could be possibly realistic again is another wing player. If this is the same guy as yours, then better yet, just killing two birds with one stone, but I'll do it quickly. I think DeMar DeRozan is a very realistic option for the Lakers. He has a player option that he's definitely going to take because he's only getting $10 million this year, so he's going to opt out of that. And he'll be a free agent this coming summer. And he's from L.A., born and raised in L.A. He's like grew up here, went to USC. I actually am still very divided on whether I actually want him to come, but at this point, you know, the Lakers kind of just got to get what they can get at this point, and DeMar DeRozan is not a bad player. I'm just not sure if he's the right player because, you know, he's averaging like 22 points still. He's improved in playmaking, averaging 4 assists, but up to this point, he still has not developed a legitimate three-point shot. He gets to the free throw line a lot. He had a disgusting dunk on Gobert tonight. I don't know if you saw it.
I saw it.
Where he erased Gobert's life, essentially. Very athletic player, very exciting player, the type of player that you would want running the wings with D'Angelo, Randle, and Clarkson, bring some excitement back to Staples. But that being said, I'm just not sure whether he's that good of a player, that great. But with that said, I do think he's a very realistic possibility. And depending on who we get besides him, we could potentially start, you know, building something at least semi-competent here. So I wouldn't mind DeRozan. I just wouldn't, he wouldn't be my number one preference, but he's definitely a very, very realistic possibility. And I almost think he's a Laker, like for sure at this point. I'm just not sure how I feel about it. I'll just have to watch a whole bunch of DeMar DeRozan highlights to get myself pumped, which should be easy because he's a dunking fiend. Yeah. So what about you?
So I agree with you that it's very realistic because he's from LA and it just makes so much sense. You could slot him right in at the three because he's like long enough. The reason I don't like him is because he's a little bit too much of a me player. And I feel like with Clarkson, Russell, and Randle, we've sort of started to build this core of guys who want to share it. And I just don't know if I want, like you said, I don't know if I want to add DeRozan. So just to throw out another quick one, I'll say Joakim Noah. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty realistic. He's been playing off the bench. I think that guy is not completely done. I mean, his offense looks like crap this year, but he's getting like 8 rebounds a game in like 19 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever he's playing. So he's not done defensively. And if you're going to pay for a defensive drone center who can also get, by the way, 4 assists to like 1.5 turnovers per game.
Right.
You know, it's going to be hard to find someone better than that. You make him a starter, he might be a 10-10 player for you. So I tend to like Noah. And I think he's semi-realistic.
Right. So I think Noah could be a potential punt option. You just kind of throw money his way and maybe sign him to like a 1-2 year contract. I'd definitely take him over Hibbert at this point because he's more active, mobile, and passes better.
Yeah.
And he could be essentially our Andrew Bogut type player.
Exactly.
In this system.
Exactly. He's not that old.
And also, yeah, exactly. And then that's why I also like Batum over DeRozan, because Batum has shown that even in a system where he's surrounded by offensively talented guys, he's a pass first kind of guy too.
Right.
So yeah, those are our realistic, semi-realistic options for this summer. We'll definitely get more into it as the year progresses and we get closer and closer to that. With that said, let's get on to, I guess it should be the most important part of our show, but it'll probably be like a 10-minute blip on our show. Let's get to the recap of the Lakers games. Woo!
They played.
All right, the Lakers games. So we started with, let's just go through summaries of this stuff. Lakers at Dallas. This, I took nothing away from this game besides Kobe was able to hit some threes. It was kind of fun. Him and Dirk kind of did little jabs at each other. I think Dirk had like an up and under on him and was kind of talking smack to him, which he's allowed to do because Dirk is playing a lot better than Kobe right now. Only other interesting development that I was pissed off at with the Dallas game is, here we go, Byron Scott again. Here we go, guys. So Larry Nance has his best game of the season, the game previous to this, in Orlando. He has 6 for 6, 13 points. And then this game, for some inexplicable reason, he plays 11 minutes. And I'm just like, dude, what are you doing right now? The guy has his best game, and all of a sudden you reinsert. Granted, Brandon Bass had a pretty good game, but why is Larry Nance only playing 11 minutes after one of his best games of the season and after a string of great performances? So I didn't understand that. I took nothing away from this game because of that. D'Angelo actually played okay, 9 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, hit 2 threes.
Only 24 minutes, though.
Only 23 minutes again, so what can you do? Lou Will played like crap, 3 for 11.
Lou Will's had like one good game this entire season.
Pretty much. The only other interesting development out of this game that I got was, this was the start of Jordan Clarkson kind of getting back on track.
Right.
Yeah, 21 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 steals, 1 block, and 3 of 5 from 3. So Jordan Clarkson's actually shooting like some ridiculous percentage from three-point land. He's shooting like 43% from three-point land on like 1.5 threes made per game, which is insane. So props to Clarkson for really working on his three-point shot. And yeah, so that was the start of it. And I took nothing else from this game. This is a crap game to watch. The score, it just seemed like both teams wanted to lose.
It did.
It was like 90 to 82. The Lakers lost, whatever. Did you take anything out of this game?
So I took a little bit more, I think. I guess what I'll say is, you know, as Laker fans, and especially as Laker, like hardcore Laker fans like we are, who watch every game, when I tell people that I watch every game at this stage in the Lakers, you know, history, I think they probably think I'm like a little bit of a sadist and I enjoy, you know, I must enjoy pain or something. Like, why would anybody subject themselves to this? You know, the reason we watch these games still, and, you know, we might win 20 games this year, but I think you and I are both going to watch every single game. The reason we do it is because we like to see little improvements. We like to see everything develop slowly as it may be, because the payoff is the best part. Eventually, yeah. I mean, hopefully, but eventually we're going to get back to the top, and it's going to feel so nice to know that you saw everything on the way up. Right. So, with this Dallas game, the thing that I took away was, coming towards the end of this road trip, I mean, this was the last game of the road trip, actually. After the like the peak Miami game where we just looked like absolute crap, I thought in Orlando we looked a lot better. The Dallas game, our defense was, it's like in each game they add something and they take something away, right? So
right.
Orlando, they played really good defense, but they gave up a billion offensive rebounds. Dallas, they played really good defense again, and they really cleaned up the offensive rebounds, but they had like a billion turnovers, you know? So I guess what I took from this Dallas game was, it's a step in the right direction. As the season has progressed, they've played better and better defense.
Right.
And it's a matter of putting it all together, which has been like the trick for us. We haven't been able to do that. I mean, I think Detroit, which we'll talk about next, was the only time it really all came together, but I like to see that they're trying harder. I mean, Byron's going to Byron. But yeah, player wise, I'll just agree with everything you said so we can move on. But
right.
as a whole team, that's what I liked about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. The defense has definitely improved. I'm not sure whether these teams are just getting lulled by the how ugly the Lakers are that they just end up mirroring us. But yeah, it's funny
Right.
because I think the exact same thing happened the next game where I could barely watch this game, dude. Like I
Well,
felt like I
the
was
Lakers
watching
play ugly
D-League.
basketball, yeah.
Oh, for sure. So the next game we actually won somehow, 97-85. The Lakers beat Detroit at home. At a certain point in like the third quarter to the fourth, I felt like I was watching D League because these guys were missing. Guys on either side were missing open layups. Like ridiculous turnovers were happening. I was just like, oh my God, I want to gouge my eyes out right now. It was just like a terrible game to watch. The Lakers held Detroit to 36% shooting, which is good. Again, I think part of it is great defense. Good defense is improving. The other part of it is Detroit played on Saturday against the Clippers, so they're playing a back-to-back, and they've been kind of slumping a little bit. Out of this game, Kobe actually had a pretty good game, and something we wish we would see more from him, the distributor Kobe that we saw kind of last year. 17 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists. That's the best kind of Kobe to have, distributor Kobe. He hit a pretty nice clutch three, and he acted like he won the finals, which is, I guess, to be expected now from Kobe. I think it's very clear at this point that this is his last season, and he's just going to milk it for what it's worth. And winning is no longer a priority to him. It's just kind of having fun and reflecting back, which I think Kobe deserves at this point. So I'm, happy to join him along for that ride, even though it's semi-futile. Clarkson continued his great, streak, 17 points, 2 of 4 from three. Russell, not too good. 9 points, 3 for 9 shooting, 1 for 6 from three. But he had a bunch of open looks that he could have easily hit, so I wasn't too concerned about that. Nick Young had a great game. I didn't really take anything much else from this game, did you?
Again, okay, so at some point, I guess I'm just maybe a little bit more optimistic, but I think that the defense, with how bad this team started the season defensively, quietly, we've moved into the middle of the pack in the NBA in opponent field goal percentage. I think we're like 13th,
That's
which
amazing.
is amazing because we were like historically bad in the first three or four games. So, just in a matter of like another 7 games or whatever, I'll call it completely flipped it around. I mean, we're not like the best defensive team in the NBA by any means, but we're like middle of the pack, which is where we want to be. We are like historically bad, I feel like, for the Lakers in offense because we were like
Oh, for sure.
barely ahead. I think we're like 1/1000th of a point ahead of the Sixers for worst field goal percentage offensively. But anyway, so I take away the defense. I really liked it. Individual player stuff. I mean, again, I'll pretty much defer to what, like, to the extent you covered it. But yeah, I like the defense. It's been getting better each game, and I know there's a tendency to think, and sometimes I do catch myself thinking, okay, maybe these teams are playing down to us, and that could very well be true. However, besides, that happening, our energy was just so much better. You know what I mean? And it's like we're playing better players, first of all. Like, we're playing Larry Nance instead of Ryan Kelly, so that helps a lot. We're playing Brandon Bass instead of Tarik, and Brandon Bass is extremely undersized, but he works much harder, I think, defensively than Tarik does. He at least
For
understands
sure.
rotations. So that stuff is helping a ton. But yeah, team defense wise, the rotations are getting so much better. Guys seem to be buying into the system, whatever system we have defensively, and it's working.
For sure. Which leads us into the next game where the Lakers reverted back to no defense Lakers because Phoenix scored 120 points to our 101. Chalk it up to maybe this being a back-to-back on the road.
Right.
I'm not sure what to take out of this game because they were in it three fourths of the. Let's go back to Byron Scott sucking because the Lakers were
Oh, I
actually
have a
in this
lot to say
game.
about Byron Scott in this game.
So the Lakers were actually in it and were actually pretty close at the end of the third, start of the fourth. Things were working well, and then Byron Scott decides to throw out this stupid, wonky lineup to start the fourth that totally ruins the Lakers. And by the time the starters come in, they're down by 15 or something ridiculous. But it's pretty much once again I think it was a Huertas, Lou Will, Nick Young, weird ass lineup that he threw out there. What do you have to say, Tommy, about this game?
Okay, so I felt the same way. We just talked about two games. I felt the same way in this game as I did about those games for three quarters. We played solid, man. I know Phoenix finished the game shooting 48%, but I swear to God, they scored like, I'm looking at the, yeah, they scored 40 points in the fourth quarter. They shot like 100% in the fourth quarter, it felt like. So up until the fourth quarter, I'm pretty sure we were holding them to at least mid to low 40s percentage wise. I wish I had, I don't know if there's a way to, anyway. What killed me in this game was, it's not the fact that we gave up 120. It's not the fact that we eventually let them shoot 48%. It's not even the fact that we gave up 18 offensive rebounds. All of those things are going to happen on the second night of a back-to-back where you had one road and one away. I think that's sort of like inevitable, especially when you have a team that's like not a lot of real professionals.
Yeah.
The one thing that really pissed me off about this game was the way that Byron Scott managed it.
Oh, yeah.
Marcelo Huertas, you have Brandon Knight, who, okay, Brandon Knight's a solid player. He's having a very good year this year. He's 45% is like, I think, a career high for him from the field. 25-4, you know, solid, solid player. He dropped a 30, 15, 10 rebound and 4 steal game on us, and he played 41 minutes. And if that fool is going to play 41 minutes, you're really going to play 22-year-old Jordan Clarkson, who has all the energy in the world, 33 minutes, and you're going to play Marcelo Huertas 14. So we are basically down by 6 going into the fourth quarter, okay? The fourth quarter starts, and Marcelo Huertas single-handedly makes that an 11-point lead because he's getting blown by so bad that, like, he has to completely bear hug guys because he's, like, screaming to the coach, I can't play defense. And he bear hugs Brandon Knight on one play, or I think it was Knight. It was one of their guards. And, okay, everyone's like, well, that was kind of startling. He can't play any defense. The very next play, they get the ball back. Very next play, he does the same thing again. Brandon Knight gets an and one. All of a sudden, it's a 9-point game. Literally, he takes the ball out of bounds, makes some stupid pass, you know, trying to be flashy or whatever, leads to a fast break 11-point game. In a matter of like a minute, this happened, okay? Byron Scott calls a timeout. Any coach in the world at this point would pull Marcelo Huertas. I know he's 32 years old. When somebody is messing up this bad, they better be LeBron James, okay, if you're going to keep them in the game. No, he proceeds to play Marcelo Huertas the first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah, you know, give me that.
His rotations are so ridiculous, okay? 6 minutes. You can go back and watch the tape. The reason I remember is because this was such a horrible decision that he made to play him for this 6 minute stretch. And he went out there, he had 2 turnovers, played zero defense. Brandon Knight ran train all over him. Archie Goodwin, you know, is a shooting guard for God's sake. And he ran all over him too. And that was like the worst thing I've ever seen. That this was happening in front of the eyes of the entire world. And he let it happen. And then he has the balls after the game to say, oh, the back-to-back wasn't an excuse and blah, 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 this and that. I'm like, no, dude, that's not, you're right, that's not an excuse. How about play Jordan Clarkson more? How about play D'Angelo Russell a little bit more? He puts D'Angelo Russell in for garbage time to, like, get some stats. You know, this fool, like, D'Angelo could have done it. Anyone on the team, put Larry Nance on Brandon Knight, and he's going to do a better job than Marcelo Huertas is, like, besides Ryan Kelly, our worst defender.
Can we talk about first how I think we've seen there's like vines of Huertas now where he,
oh my God,
it's so, so funny how much he commits, and that's how he gets crossed over so badly. But he like commits his entire life to trying to get the ball, and then all of a sudden the guy's just, it's not even like a crazy crossover, but because of the amount of commitment he takes to kind of lunge at, over at something, the other guys, whoever has the ball, just kind of just do like a normal crossover to the left, and it just looks amazing because Huertas is so freaking stupid. And there's several vines of that. There's one Tyler Johnson one from the Heat that's just ridiculous, and another one from Dallas or you know, the Suns game, like, but it's just ridiculous
to watch. You know, is it, you know, it's a coincidence. We never seem to have plays that are that atrocious in games that Marcelo Huertas doesn't play in.
Huertas is like,
he's not
the new Swaggy P.
Look, Huertas, before this goes too far towards like down the bashing him, he's not a horrendous player. Like, he can play. No. Like, we've seen him. His offense actually isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, like, shooting wise. He looks weird, but it goes in. He gets his assists. But he has some glaring flaws defensively. And if you're going to play him 14 minutes a game, then you're smoking some crack. You know what I mean? Like, I know, sorry, I shouldn't say 14 minutes a game because he doesn't play when Kobe plays. But if you're going to play him in the games Kobe doesn't play 14 minutes a game, which is going to be a lot of games this season, you're smoking some crack. You know, play Clarkson a little bit more in those games. Play Russ a little bit more. These guys are young. They can handle it. You know, give Lou Will a couple minutes. Don't play. If you have to play Huertas, play in 5 minutes.
Right.
But watching this guy attempt to play defense is like the saddest thing I've ever seen in my life. And Byron, for all the talk he does, has like, I don't know. Like, does nobody in the media have like the guts to? This is the problem with the mainstream media, right? And part of the reason why we wanted to do this podcast, no one's going to straight up go out there and say Marcelo Huertas is an abomination on defense, because they all have to kiss up to each other, right? They all have to say like, oh, it didn't work out this time because, you know, make some excuse, because otherwise those guys aren't going to talk. You know, they're going to get like blacklisted. So, unfortunately, we don't have that to worry about that, so we can just say Marcelo Huertas is like the worst point guard defender I've ever seen in my life. But I can't believe Byron can go out there and say like, so-and-so needs to play tougher, so-and-so needs to have more fire, so-and-so needs to do this, and then he puts in Marcelo Huertas, and oh god, it's just so bad.
Exactly. And then, so let's close this game out with some D'Angelo Russell talk, because he's the most important Laker right now to talk about. Yeah. I heard some people bashing D'Angelo like, oh, wow, you know, you come in and you finally show up in the fourth quarter like it's the start of the game, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, yeah, but Byron Scott also played Marcelo Huertas the first 6 minutes of this fourth quarter. What do you expect when he brings D'Angelo Russell halfway into this? You know, yeah, D'Angelo probably should have been more assertive like he was in the fourth to start the game. But I was encouraged a little bit by what he was able to show in garbage time, even though it was garbage time and the defense was kind of lax. He had a nice jumper. He had a really nice he took it straight to the lane for two layups, I think. So he did some of that. I do wish that he would be a little more aggressive to start off with. I wish he would do what he did in the fourth quarter to start the game. I'm just kind of tired of all the people. We've talked about this multiple times, but it's getting increasingly glaringly clear that people are almost feeding into this guy lacks fire kind of mentality and narrative that Byron Scott has been throwing out there. Because I was listening to post-radio game, and people were just bashing D'Angelo about how he doesn't have it, he doesn't have the fire, he lacks the will, he just looks so lackadaisical and like lax out there. And I am not of that opinion whatsoever. Do I agree that he should be more assertive, that he can't keep trying to, you know, follow the system or wait for guys? Yes, I do agree he needs to show more and show it more often than he has been doing. Do I agree that he's a lackadaisical player, that he lacks fire? I do not, because I've seen him have that quote-unquote fire in Ohio State when he was, you know, the guy and he was allowed to actually control the show. And you can see him get hyped, man. There's crazy, you know, clips of him like talking smack, you know, going, you know, getting into the game and everything like that. I feel like that's what people want from him, but who's going to do that on this team? Like, realistically, what do they have to be hyped about? Really? They're always good down like 10, 15 points. You know, I just don't understand what they want him to do besides maybe like, you know, kicking himself in the, you know, butt or something, like, you know, punching his chest or something, you know, yelling at somebody. Like, that doesn't show anything, you know. If you want to talk about him being more assertive, like, do that, but don't say this kid lacks the fire and he looks too cool out there. It's like something that I can't get with, and I'm of the belief that I'm not going to totally bash D'Angelo until I know what he can do with the ball and the system around him without this coach and this system. to kind of shackle him down at this point. So, any thoughts on that?
I agree largely with what you said. For someone to bash D'Angelo at
There's a lot of people.
To be honest, I hadn't even read any of that, so I'm glad you brought it up. But to me, that's just so ridiculous. This sort of goes back to that comment I made like at the very beginning about how it seems like there's this new young generation of guys who really want to. I don't know when it started, maybe with like Steph Curry, but it's like they want, no matter how hot they are, they want to share it with their friends. You know what I mean? They want to share it with their teammates. They really want to be team players. And I think D'Angelo Russell is exactly that. He, do you think this guy can't come out and shoot 18 shots a game? He easily could, okay? He has the ball in his hands. He's the point guard. When he gets around one screen, he is really, we've talked about this before. Another thing he's underrated with is he hugs the screener so tight that he is able to get space on those screens so effectively. He could take a shot coming off of those screens literally every time if he wanted. It'd be mid-range jumper, which for him is like pretty much cash. Like it would be a very high percentage. He would personally develop a lot as an offensive player. And, you know, maybe he'd be shooting 40, 41%, like a lot of rookies do, but he'd be averaging 18 points a game. Okay. He could do that with his eyes closed. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to come in. He wants to try to learn Byron's retarded system. Sorry, I shouldn't say retarded.
That's okay.
He wants to try to come in and learn Byron's stupid system. He wants to try to run it. He wants to try to get his teammates involved. He wants to pass it to Clarkson. He likes to set Clarkson up. He likes to set up Randall. He likes to set up Hibbert. He likes to do that stuff. And so to say that he doesn't have the fire is so ridiculous to me. And like, oh, so you're going to come in at the very end and show the fire? No, because it's garbage time. So he's like, well, I might as well get my shots up. Not like from a stat standpoint, just for like experience taking shots in a game standpoint.
Right.
You know what I mean? And now next time he comes into a game to start a game, maybe he'll have more confidence taking that mid-range jumper because he'll be thinking, oh, I hit a couple of these in the last game. Big deal. I could do it. You know, so that's just so sad to me to trash a guy for doing that. Like, he could easily go out there and do what Kobe's doing and shoot it 19 times a game.
Yeah.
And he'd probably get trashed for that too. And you know, it's like that's what people want him to do, I guess, quote unquote. But if he was doing that, he would also get bashed. So it's a long season. We're about like, we're like an eighth of the way through or something.
Yeah.
So slowly, 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 you're going to see his numbers start to creep up. And eventually, I think here we're going to get to a point where he's averaging 15 or so points per game pretty consistently.
And you have to keep in mind that we are not playing how we should be playing with this group
Not
because
at
we should
all.
be playing in transition. He should be running the
Oh, I have
floor.
some
He
comments
should be
on that
doing
too
all
if we
this
want
stuff.
to talk about that. Yeah, exactly. So I don't agree with the bashing at all.
Exactly. So we'll wrap this up right here. But in conclusion, D'Angelo, I guess one thing that I wish he would do more is, and this is a lose-lose situation for him because he's under like this crazy martial law system where if he makes one mistake, he's gonna be
Exactly.
criticized for it. He's gonna be pulled. But those are the kinds of mistakes he should be making, because he should have that freedom to express his creativity and learn from them. But right now, he can't really do that, so I hope there's a day where he can be allowed to have a four turnover game, five turnover game, but in the midst of that, learn from the types of passes that he's threading and types of passes he's making. Because right now, he's not even allowed to make any passes besides like a bounce pass to a curl off, to a guy off the curl, which is really sad because it just really stifles his creativity. And I feel really bad for anybody who's never actually seen him play in Ohio State, because if this is what you're seeing out of D'Angelo Russell, I can see why you would bash him.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, this guy cannot do anything.
Yep.
They say he's like Magic Johnson, but look at these passes he's making. Yeah, look at these passes he's making. It's part of the Princeton, This is what you're gonna get. So, any last thoughts?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, so with that said, that's our recap of the Lakers' three-game stint. Previously, I think our next game is against Toronto on Friday, which should be a doozy because I think they're on like a two-game, three-game losing streak. Not that it matters because we're probably going to lose anyways,
They'll kill
but
us.
Should be fun to watch a future Laker DeMar DeRozan play. So
Right.
keep your eyes up for
Wait, can I
that.
just say one more like
Yeah, go for
overarching
it.
thing? I'll make it
Yeah.
short. Okay, another thing, and I put this up there with the Huerta's ridiculousness and decision making, from a coaching standpoint, I mean, and a game management standpoint, which falls on the coach. If you're gonna play small ball, okay, it's not literally you put small guys in and you somehow win. That's not what small ball is, okay? Small ball is, the theory is, if you're gonna go small, you understand as a coach manager that you're gonna give something up defensively, okay? But what the hope is that you're gonna gain more offensively by going small than you're giving up. And you know, the way you do that is by running teams out of the building. It makes no sense for me that we're putting in Brandon Bass as a backup center and we're playing the exact same Princeton offense when he comes into the game. We're posting up a 6'7" center. Like, that's not what small ball is. Like, you're supposed to run. If you're going to have Bass and Larry Nance, those are two really good athletes in your front court who can sprint, okay? Swaggy wants to run and shoot threes. Lou Williams likes to run and push the pace. Whoever you have playing point guard in that with that lineup is going to want to run. You have to run for God's sake. And this gets back to the game management. I know I'm taking a tangent from we just talked about D'Angelo, but it boggles my mind that it's like Byron got this idea, like, oh, small ball, like Golden State does it, it works. But it's not literally, oh, he made these stupid comments about playing Kobe at the power forward in the preseason. It's not literally you put Kobe at the power forward and do everything else the same. The whole idea is you're adapting your game plan to the lineup. You know,
Right.
if you're going to put Brandon Bass at the center, there's no reason you should be running the exact same thing. Phil Jackson, for as much as he was a triangle stickler, when we were winning championships and we had the bench mob, if we all
Yeah.
remember, with Farmar and Sasha and all those guys, he didn't make those guys run the triangle to a T. When we got slowed down in the half court, sure, go through your sets. Those guys came in and they pushed the pace. And the whole point
Exactly.
was the starters were out there running the triangle to a T. And when the bench came in, they went small. They played Turioff, who was quote unquote small. I mean, he was 6'10". I guess nowadays that's like a legit center, but at the time he was sort of small for a center, and they would run. And for some reason, Byron thinks that small ball means you just play a small lineup and you run the exact same offense. And it just blows my mind.
Unfortunately, that's how he handles every situation, you know. Yeah, we need to shoot more threes, so they just take a bunch more threes. With that said, you know, the Lakers do a lot more running in practice than they actually do running in actual games, which is really sad. What's the point of all that running in practice if that's not what they actually implement on the court with guys who can do it? With that said, we gotta run. Did you like that
That was
transition?
good.
Oh, that was very good. So yeah, we'll see you guys again sometime next week. Again, at Lakers Legacy Pod on Twitter, iTunes, please leave us a rating and review. You guys have been slacking. Just kidding. But yeah, give us 5 stars, all that good stuff. Tommy, I'll see you later.
All right, man. Bye.
I'm not just struggling, battling, pushing and pulling, and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. I am.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.